We welcome back to the program Dr. Virginia Bielak. How are you this morning?
Hi, good morning. I'm fine. Thank you.
Great.
Glad to be here.
It's great to hear your voice again. It's a monthly ritual here on the airwaves with you. We love it. So let's catch up a little bit. What's changed since we last spoke about a month ago?
Well, since we last spoke about a month ago, we initially had an increase in patients who are hospitalized with coronavirus, and thankfully, due to the social distancing measures put in place by the governor, increased testing, we've managed to have a decrease in the number of patients who are in the hospital and a decrease in the number of daily admissions, although we still have several patients admitted every day with coronavirus in our hospital.
So we're heading in the right direction. Do you think that beginning phase one on Wednesday, according to the governor's plans, do you think that's a good idea? Or do you think that should be, you know, maybe temporarily halted for a little while?
Well, you know, I'm not a public health expert. I'm an infectious disease physician, and I have to defer to people that know more about public health than I do. I think we've clearly gone in the right direction, and this has saved lives, and it's come at a price, though, of people's jobs, family welfare, et cetera. So I think these are really difficult decisions. My hope is that with some of the measures being put in place, people staying far away from others, and people continuing to please wear masks when you're out and you cannot avoid being being outside of 6 feet from someone, please wear your mask, because if you happen to be carrying coronavirus, that will protect the people around you. So I'm hopeful that we do not start to see an uptick in the numbers of diseases. But I think those of us who take care of patients are a little bit anxious, but we understand that people's lives have to go on.
Sure.
And so I hope things go well.
Oh, well, I think we're all in it. We're all right there with you. Though you mentioned, you know, continue to wear your masks, which is really a kind of a hot topic of controversy, because we're hearing from some doctors who are saying, no, your body needs to build the antibodies and be exposed to things. That's how we fight things off. That's how we fight viruses off and so on and so forth. And then other doctors, you know, like Fauci, for example, Fauci's saying to continue to wear your mask. And I could have sworn I heard the Surgeon General say you really shouldn't be wearing a mask as often as you've been told. So therefore, there's a great confusion around, are these masks, should they be worn, or where should they be worn, or should they be even worn at all?
Well, again, a mask really protects other people from you. And we all want to be protected from other people. I think I'm going to go on the side of, I think you should continue to wear your masks. Yes, we all want to get antibody to this coronavirus, and we all want to be protected. The problem is, if you become colonized or infected with this virus, you may have no symptoms, but you may go on to die from this, and there's no predicting that what will happen to you when you get this virus. And so I personally don't think it's worth taking the chance of seeing what happens. We're all hoping for a vaccine in the near future. Technology has come a long way in recent years. It's amazing to me that they already are starting the vaccine trials. And I think that's the way to build immunity, not to go out and let yourself get infected, because that could be disastrous for you.
Good point. We've been hearing, you know, the term herd immunity being tossed around in a few places, and there's a great number of people who are not familiar with that term or have no idea the true definition of herd immunity is. Could you explain that a little bit?
Well, Well, herd, when you have a number of people in a population that are immune to an infectious agent such as a virus, mm-hmm. it makes it much more difficult for the virus to spread because there are fewer people that it can infect and thus spread to other people. So herd immunity ideally is in the 90% area, and that's what we aim for with many of our vaccines. But the number I've heard bandied about for this particular infection is if we can get maybe 60% of people immune, the virus will not spread as well. Ideally, that still leaves 40% of the population vulnerable. So my hope is that we can establish this herd immunity with the use of a vaccination, which would be safe for people. And thus the virus just, if it lands on you, it'll get killed and it won't spread to another person. So although you will have some people who do not have immunity, it will be harder for them to become ill.
Oh, I see. Okay, so I'm glad you cleared that up. Now, we've heard about the symptoms. You know, we've heard, you know, the extremely high fever. We've heard about shortness of breath. We've heard about a persistent cough. And even more recently, I think we've heard about... is it pink eye or something? I just in the last month or so. Are there other new symptoms that originally were not linked to coronavirus, but however, over the last month or so, we've learned that that are actually linked to coronavirus?
Well, I've practiced infectious diseases for a long time, and I don't remember a virus behaving like this.
Really?
While this is predominantly a respiratory involvement, we are seeing people with more and more symptoms. Early on, we recognized abdominal pain, diarrhea, vomiting, loss of taste, loss of smell can be a symptom of this disease. So it really has a whole host of different types of symptoms that it can present with. And so we are suspicious of people with a lot of unexplained symptoms, and we test them for coronavirus. Currently, we're testing all of our patients who are admitted to the hospital for this virus, but we're more suspicious of some when they come in. And we as physicians haven't eliminated any symptom because the virus just presents in many, many different ways.
So in other words, you could have two completely different individuals who mention completely separate and unique symptoms, and they would both get tested, and they could actually both have coronavirus, even though they each have different symptoms.
Yes, that is true. The vast majority of people do have respiratory symptoms,
right,
even in addition to other symptoms, but especially in some of the elderly population, just fever and feeling tired have been symptoms of their coronavirus infection.
But it's that skyrocketed fever. That's the telltale one, right? That's the one that's probably most serious and most prevalent.
Well, it's certainly a very common symptom, and patients just feel awful when they have this disease if they get symptomatic. So it's not something you want to risk.
Is it in fact airborne?
Well, you know, it's clearly droplet spread, and droplets are big droplets that we all make when we talk or laugh or sneeze. And how there's some debate about how long some of these droplets can stay in the air. Measles is a true airborne illness, and that if you have a patient in one corner of a large room and the patient has measles, it is possible that somebody diagonally across who has no direct contact with measles will get measles if they're not immune. This doesn't quite spread like that. Coronavirus doesn't quite spread to that extent airborne. And there have been a number of experiments using artificial conditions that have tried to figure out how far this can spread. But I think it's a little early to say in nature how far it spreads. But it's not airborne like measles is airborne.
Gotcha. You know, we're coming into some warmer weather. Not just warmer weather here and there, but you know, as we get approach Memorial Day and then you have June and certainly the summer months, we've been hearing that the warmer weather is a great combatant for the coronavirus and that we should see a sharp decline. But then we're also hearing that there's somewhat of a possibility that come, I don't know, October or early November, that we could actually start to see the numbers rise again. Is that what you're hearing as well, or by your experience, is that true?
Yeah. Well, I think it remains to be seen how much of a decrease warm weather will be responsible for. I think there's a lot of different things at play here. We're still going to be somewhat social distancing. People hopefully will still be wearing masks. So I think it'll be hard to tease out exactly what the contribution of warmer weather will be. A lot of us are concerned about what is going to happen when people are crowded together again inside and the weather gets colder and children are back at school. And, oh, by the way, it'll become flu season again. So yeah. That has a lot of us concerned about what we might see as a second wave of this virus.
Could the second week, could the second wave be worse? Is there a chance that it could be not as harsh as the first wave, or is that information still unknown at this time?
I think the information is still unknown. What will be out there is influenza, which can look very similar.
Right. And we get that every year, yeah.
And people have been known to have both coronavirus and influenza at the same time, and so it could be a very challenging situation come fall.
Mm. And let's talk a little bit about vaccinations and finding. I guess there's two ways of looking at it. There's a cure for a person who's already has contracted coronavirus, you know, and then there's a vaccination that's more preventative from even obtaining it in the first place. Which do you think we will see first?
Well, it's, again, it's hard to know. We do have a drug called Remdesivir,
right,
that the FDA has said we could use under an emergency use authorization. What we do know this drug does is it shortens the duration of symptoms in many patients. It numerically decreased the death rate, but that was not statistically significant when looked at in the current studies.
Well, it was used to fight Ebola, right?
Well, that's the drug was originally designed against Ebola, and when coronavirus started to circulate, the manufacturer took this drug out and tested it and found that in the laboratory, this drug has activity against coronavirus in cell culture, and so they started using it in people. It's not really a cure. It shortens symptoms, but I think we're still waiting to see if something more effective will come along. Right now, Remdesivir is all we have. A vaccine clearly is a better strategy because people won't get sick.
Mm.
Remdesivir will not necessarily prevent all patients from going on a ventilator, and it clearly doesn't prevent all deaths. But a vaccine that is effective and safe would prevent people from getting sick.
I see. We've heard, for the last several weeks about hydrochloroquine and combined with the Z-Pak and doctors really using it when they have to, especially when there's an elder patient and they're trying to save their life. But then you hear Dr. Fauci and some others say, no, we should not be using that. There's not enough data, and it was originally used for polio or years ago, and or other some other diseases from yesteryear. But yet it seems to be working. Not 100%, but certainly when you're up against death, you'll try anything, even something that maybe has an 85% or 90% chance, which is still pretty darn good in my book. Where is there why the controversy? Why do some people say, and when I say people, I mean doctors, why are some doctors using it while other doctors are saying, no, stay away from it?
Again, in the laboratory, hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine kill the virus, but they kill lots of viruses, and they've never been shown to be effective treatments for those viruses in humans. They both have a lot of side effects, including some side effects that have to do with the heart and can even cause cardiac arrest. And this whole pandemic came on us so quickly that we didn't have well-designed studies set up to study drugs like chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. So we are left with a lot of small studies. And in the small studies done thus far, there's been no real significant signal that hydroxychloroquine is beneficial in people who have coronavirus. So that, taken together with the cardiac side effects, have caused the drugs to fall out of favor with clinicians.
I see. I have just about a minute or so left. What are you hearing as far as finding a vaccination? We've heard a year. We've heard a year and a half, or even upwards of close to 2 years. I didn't think vaccinations. I thought it took even longer to come up with vaccinations. But I know there are several countries, and they're all. There's more people working on this than anything else. People have dropped other projects that they were working on. By the way, not all. People are still fighting cancer, by the way. They're still, you know, I don't want to, you know, scare people or anything like that. But for the most part, globally, there's a lot of scientists that are working on finding a vaccination or something that, based on your knowledge, how far away are we from doing that, and how competitive is the U.S. and compared globally with other nations that are looking to find a cure as well?
Well, I don't know everything that's going on. I do know that scientists have worked on vaccines for diseases such as Ebola, and then, you know, they managed to control an Ebola outbreak, so they sort of put this technology